So we just came out of mega tornado action in Tennessee, as you may have seen on the news. So we had our board meeting at our house, and whenever we do that, and you know tornado time is there, Cheryl and I have to kind of plan on where we putting everybody just in case, you know, because you're supposed to go to your safe spot. So if you're in our home, we have about a 2,300 square foot home, and downstairs, which is just Cheryl and me, we literally go into our coat closet, and you take some coats off. And you know, if you've lived in tornado country, you know that they have incredible things now where they can track it to streets. So I mean, literally, you're watching on television, and there it is at Del Rio Pike, which is about a mile and a half from my house. And so when it's there, they say, hey, if anybody's like in a mile or two of this, you might want to get into your safe spot. And so Cheryl and I, it's just the two of us, we throw a few of the coats out. Our dog refuses to follow us. She always goes behind the couch, which she's fine there unless the car happens to come through the door or through the wall. Then she wouldn't be in good shape. So Cheryl, that's where Cheryl and I will have to go. But we had nine people over. And so Cheryl and I decided, because, you know, you try to get as many walls. So we were going to need to pull stuff out of the laundry room so people could get under the stairs, and then the rest go in the bathroom, you know. So fortunately, we didn't have to do that. So we were thankful for that, and thankful that the majority of people made it through. But if you've never seen a tornado and its effects, my mom was going to start with telling you about the three women in my life. So I'll tell you about my mom. She grew up as a farmer's daughter in northern Minnesota. And she told me when she was a little girl, she remembers seeing a single piece of straw that was driven by a tornado through a telephone pole. So literally, here's the telephone pole, and there's a single, like, it's just the damage, the wreckage, the power is just absolutely amazing. So my mom just turned 80, and mom and dad live in Phoenix. We're trying to get them our way. Dad's got the beginnings of dementia, and so we're trying to get them back our way. But my mom, some of what you get from me, you have to realize comes from mom and dad. I've watched dad obey, leaving business, going back to Bible college, doing a lot of things. But mom is the 4:30 in the morning intercessor. That as I was growing up as a young man, and my brother Tom, who's 2 years younger, Tom works for CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network, out of Nashville. He does a lot of their sports stories. And Tom and I are both involved because we had a mom that got up at 4:30 every morning and pounded heaven for her husband and two boys. And, you know, mom is gold. If she was here, you would be so blessed by who she is as a person. You know, the older we get, the more the fruit of the Spirit should be evident in our life. Did you know that? We're not supposed to be grumpy old men and women. My friend Dan Sneed tells this story where a sweet, sweet pastor's wife, just the sweetest woman you would ever meet in your life. Her husband goes on to heaven, and she's now in her 70s, and they put her into a nursing retirement kind of facility. And one day when the family comes in, the director kind of does this, come here. So brings them into his office, shuts the door, says, I need to talk to you about your mom. He said, well, what do you mean? And he said, she's swearing like a sailor. And when men walk by the door, she sticks her cane out and trips them. You know, that's not good for an 80-year-old man. And do you know that what's really inside of you, the older you get, the filters come down? Maybe we just need to close in prayer now, right? And say, okay, that's enough. All right. But you know, the point is really there. The older you get, what's really in you comes out. I was just talking to my three buddies. I have three guys that I meet with once a month that was real accountability and friendship. And we've gone fishing in Costa Rica where we caught a 300-pound tuna and took us 2 hours to get the thing in the boat, to being there with each other and their spouses in challenging times. And I just shared this story with them, and they all looked at me. You know, they're my age, 54, and they're all looking at me like, oh my gosh, what's going to come out of me? So they left that meeting very sobered. Well, I say all that to say, when you're with my mom, you see a woman who has let the work of Jesus be very real in her life. She loves, she serves, her attitude is stellar, And I'm just watching this woman at 80 years of age continue to be more godly as she gets older. And so that's part of my heritage, for which I'm very grateful. Then there's Cheryl. Cheryl, when our children were little, one time we watched a Native American movie, and when they were like 6 and 4, they said, "Indian names are so cool." And they decided we all needed to have them. So Ryan became Loud in Mourning, because he was loud in mourning. Malia became Ants in Pants, because she's the type of little girl that would come jumping on the bed in the early morning hours. "What fun thing are we going to do today?" You know, just activity. I became Phone on Ear, because of how often I'm on the phone, you know. But Cheryl's is the one that has stuck. She's got two big dimples, and so our kids named her Holes in Cheeks. So I can't tell you how honored and delighted I am every morning to wake up next to Holes in Cheeks. And Cheryl has been walking. We've known each other for about 35 years now, and we've been married for, this December will be 32. And she's the delight of my life. I love her very, very much, and she's got a gentle, quiet spirit, and you know, as was shared already, she's quite a gifted artist, and she's been, you know, really the person that has walked side by side with me in all that we've done in our ministry adventures. And so I remember telling her when we were living in Hawaii, where we met and got married, and shortly after we were engaged, I said, "You know, I'm looking forward to getting old and wrinkly with you." And she said, "Well, I don't really want." I said, "I know you don't want to be, but we're going to be, you know." And the older we get, the more we love each other. And does it mean there's not bumps along the way? Of course, we're human beings. There's moments that I'm selfish, or she's selfish, or, you know, I know that may be shocking to you, but if she was here, she'd be able to really confess my sins to you very well. So that's why she's not here. But so Cheryl, you know, is front and center in my life. And then my daughter, Malia. Malia's 27, and she is a lot of fun. And she's the kind of little girl that, you know, was a bit mischievous. And so when we'd be at the mall, I was telling some of the ladies this last night, when we'd be at the mall, it's junior high, right? You know that age, you're looking at everybody, what are people thinking? And so we'd be in the mall, and I'd have her hand, and I would start going like this, "Hi, Leah!" And I'd start just being obnoxious. She'd go, "Dad, Dad!" Because she's looking, and there's her friend walking by, and I'm acting like an idiot. And so one day, about 2 years later, she got me back. And so I start doing this. She's now like a ninth grader. And she stops, let goes of my hand, and really loud says, "You're not my father." I thought, oh, shoot, she got me. And so my pet name from my daughter is Dork. She just looks at me and smiles and says, "Dad, you're such a dork. I love you so much. You're such a dork." And Malia is dating a young man that is kind of running through the gauntlet of dad and brother, and he loves God but hasn't come to know Jesus yet. And so we're just continuing to walk with him. And so I have a son as well, Ryan, and my daughter-in-law is going to have a baby in September. So we're going to be grandparents for the first time. So we're very excited about that. Yeah. 2 weeks from today, we'll know if it's a boy or a girl. So everybody's excited about that. So that's just a little bit about my journey and my family. So it's a joy to be with you today. How many of you at one level or another have been going through discipleship journey, just so I kind of have a feel? All right, so a good chunk of you. So I've been asking the Lord, you know, I talked to some of your ladies about, you know, because there were so many things we could talk about. And one of the things is we talked on the phone maybe a month or so ago was just to talk a little bit about in this first session on relationships. You know, I don't know if you've thought about Jesus like this, but he was the most incredible relator that has ever walked the planet. And I believe as followers of Jesus, there should be nobody that walks better in relationships than people who love Jesus. We should be the best relators on the planet, period. There should be nobody that relates to people better. I don't care if it's your family, or if it's on your job, or it's in your neighborhood, or it's with, you know, workmates. We should be awesome relators. Why? Because we're an extension of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, who is the most incredible relator, who loved us so much that he shed, so to speak, his role there in heaven and came down to wear this little stuff called flesh, just like us, to relate to us that closely. And as we know from the life of Jesus, how he related to people was incredible. And so I want to ask you a question as we start. Are you a good relator? Are you a good relator? Doesn't matter what situation you get dropped into, do you know how to relate well to people? Or are you a relational porcupine? And the closer people get, the quills come out. Our testimony as followers of Jesus needs to match the fact that we're learning, because none of us does this perfectly, but that we're all learning to be good relators to the world around us. In the Bible, John 12, verses 23 to 26, Jesus says, the way the world will know that God has sent his son is that you worship really loud. No. The way that the world will know that God has sent his son is that you love one another. So I want you to catch that. The way the world, people who don't follow Jesus, the way the world will know that God has actually sent his son is the way that they see you relating with one another as followers of Jesus and relating to them. That's what God said. He said, that's the way. It's not just going to be through evangelism and missions. It's the way that they see you relating with one another. And if I'm really honest with you, you know, I have the privilege of doing lots of travel and speaking in different denominations and backgrounds, so it kind of lets me, you know, stick a wet finger in the air to feel where the wind's blowing and kind of see what's going on. And can I just tell you that this is a problem? This is a problem that we have. And one of the reasons the world looks at followers of Jesus very odd is they see we can't even get along in our own ranks. And they look at us and go like, why do I need to hear from you when you can't even get along with someone who also says they love Jesus? And it's learning to understand, you know, so let me give you a definition of love in just a second. I can say this to you, and then I'll tell you why I mean this. I can look at any one of you in the eye today and say, I love you. And your first response might be, you don't even know me. But see, love doesn't have to do as much with knowledge as it does obedience. Let me give you a definition of love. Love is choosing the highest good for those around you. So when I look at you in the eye and I say I love you, what I mean by that is by the grace of Jesus, when I'm with you, I'm committing to choose your best. Which might be helping you get somewhere you need to be. It might be you need some food on your table. Or it might be a very loving but firm correction in your life. Love is choosing somebody else's highest good. So that's, if we all commit to say, okay, I want to choose this person's best. And it's not just through your lenses, but through godly lenses. What do they need in their life right now? And we might think, well, the best is for me to just give them a little punch of love, you know, and tell them what I really think. But let me give you a little phrase that has saved my rear end for many years. Darlene Cunningham, who is the wife of Lauren Cunningham, they founded Youth of the Mission together. It's the largest missions organization in the world. And Darlene saw something in me as a young man, and as about 20, I remember I could take you right to the place there in Kailua, Kona, where she pulled me aside. She just looked at me. She said, come here, Dave. She pulled me aside privately. She said, I want to tell you a secret that will help you as a leader. And here's what she said. Only speak into people's lives in the categories that they open their life up to you. Don't go hopping fences. Can I just tell you, we do that all the time. If someone says, hey, I need a little wisdom on my finances. I need a little wisdom on what should I do with my child on this. Because they open one area of their life up, we think we can go diving into all of it. That destroys relationships. But what I have learned over the years, if you're faithful with what they ask you to speak into, you know what happens? I can't tell you how many people then years later come back and just say, hey, I want you to know you have the freedom to speak in my life anywhere, anytime, about anything. but I've had to earn that. And if you are a parent of adult children, you have to earn that. You no longer can say to your 28-year-old, all right, I've had it, to your room. It just doesn't work anymore, does it? I think you've lost your mind, all right? And we have to learn how to be able to express love. You know, in John chapter 12, Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls on the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And part of the way that you express love is dying to self. That doesn't mean like, I really love chocolate cake, I gotta die to that. It's not what it means. What it means is dying to selfishness, me first, so that you can give your life away to others. And so part of our walking love is choosing someone's best, it's laying our life down for them. So there are times when I travel that, if I'm really honest with you, I don't feel like going. It's not when I get there is fine, but just the travel. And so there's one particular trip about 4 or 5 years ago, 2010, 4 years ago, and I had to go speak in Virginia, and I had to fly into Richmond, and then I had about a 2-hour drive, stayed at a hotel that night, and then the next day was with this retreat of pastors. And I remember getting in the car at the Richmond airport, it was like 8 at night, and I just said, Lord, I need your companioning tonight. I really want your companioning. And I felt like, just in driving, I just felt like the Lord was, it was one of those kind of moments where it was like, Dave, what's on your heart? What do you want to talk about? And as I was just, you know, thinking and praying, I just, Lord, I need to know, how do I be a parent to adult children? Anybody ever wonder that? Or could you, okay. So I got to tell you, by the time I got to the hotel, I was so excited to go in the room and write down what I got. And so let me share with you this picture. So I got this picture. It was like a frame. It was like a frame. And so in here, the life of relating to my kids was happening. You know, the last thing I wanted to be was like the helicopter dad or the father-in-law from hell. You know? And the Lord gave me this picture of this frame. And in here was the relating and all that. But there were these four pieces. So the first piece was this. Love them well. Love them well. I can't, you know, tell you what a blessing it was. A day Malia came to me several years ago and she just said, Dad, I want you to know, because she's been our rascal. But she has said, Dad, you and Mom have loved me unconditionally and I know that. Do you love well? Are our children convinced that we're willing to lay down our lives for them? Not in some dramatic way, but in a practical way. Love them well. Then the second part of the frame was continue to model for them what godly obedience looks like. Continue to model for them what godly obedience looks like. Which means you don't wear a badge that says, did you notice I'm obeying? It's just living your life so that when they bump into your life, there's a little bit of Jesus that just kind of comes out. Just model for them what it looks like without saying anything. Just model it for them. So they see the way Cheryl and I relate to each other. They see the way that I relate to people or my team. Cheryl told me the other day, she said, hey, I want to tell you a compliment that your daughter-in-law gave you, because Cheryl and Malia and Kendall were together. And last Sunday was the Franklin Street Fair. And so they shut down Franklin, about 150,000 people or so come walking in those 2 days, and it's just about six blocks of Old Town shut down. It's kind of like I got an Alexandria kind of feel to it, all shut down and people. And so that was the day we met Malia's boyfriend's parents for the first time. And so Malia and Kendall and Cheryl were out to eat last week, and Malia was just being a little honest. I'm just kind of nervous about this. And Cheryl said, you know what Kendall said? Kendall said, don't worry about it. Your dad relates to people really well. He'll do great. And I love that. I love that they saw that. I didn't have to say anything about it, but Cheryl said, I just want you to know how your daughter-in-law perceives you. Okay?
So modeling godly obedience. So our kids know that Cheryl and I pray. We do prayer retreats twice a year where we just get away for a day to 3 days. We usually try to stay somewhere where there's a mall nearby so that in case we have a break, Cheryl can exercise her spiritual gifts, if you know what I'm saying. And, you know, and where we just seek the Lord together about things. All right? And we don't have to make a big to-do about it, say, you know, this is what the Lord showed us in our prayer time. They just knew we were gone on our prayer retreat. And it's just modeling for them the life of Jesus. Okay? The third one we've had a lot of fun with. Look for ways to serve their dreams. Look for ways to serve their dreams. So Rye comes to me when he's engaged. He was born in Hawaii when we were with Youth of the Mission. He'd been there for a YWAM DTS, Discipleship Training School. And he said, Dad, Kendall's never been to Hawaii. So for our honeymoon, I'd like to go to Hawaii, but I'd like to go somewhere I've never been, which in this case for him was Kauai. So he said, that's what I'd really like to do. And so Cheryl and I years ago got a timeshare that we use once a year for a week that was we got for our family. So we could just. So I said, Rye, what if Mom and I gave you our timeshare for the week? And sure enough, we plugged it in, and weeks later, he got a phone call, and so we covered their whole time. We paid the $155 fee and saved them about $2,000. And we got to help them fulfill some of their dreams. But you know, if you're going to do that with your kids, some of it may cost money, some of it may cost time. Some, you know, some might be introducing them to somebody, but it's not fulfilling your dreams. It's helping them to fulfill theirs. And the only way that you know that is it means you have to be involved in their lives. You have to hear the little thing when Malia says, man, Dad, I wish I could get some lessons on how to shoot pictures better because she's got a good eye for that. I said, really? And so there's a connection she has with a guy who's a professional photographer who is able to help her with some things. Look for ways to serve dreams. And sometimes are not the same as yours. It's kind of interesting how that happens, isn't it? But it's getting into their world. And there was one time I did something for Ryan that he just stopped and he looked at me. He's 6'4", so it's kind of like this. And he said, Dad, you have no idea how much this means to me. And I didn't. On a 1 to 10, I would have guessed a 6. For him, it was like a 12. And the Lord showed us that's part of being an adult or a parent to your adult children. Okay? Here's the fourth one. The fourth one is pray by doing spiritual warfare on their behalf. Pray by doing spiritual warfare on their behalf. What I mean by that is, you know, as a guy, my imagery is climbing the back of the hill, getting up to the top of the hill with my bow and arrow and being able to see how the enemy of our soul, the devil, is going to try to steal, kill, and destroy from them. I can take my bow out before he gets there. And it's strategically climbing the hill in prayer and being able to see what's going on in their lives and be able to say, that ain't going to happen. And there's times that it gets challenging. And there's times, sometimes it's just praying over them. It's maybe not a spiritual word, but it's just praying over them. So Ryan comes to me, you know, here this new baby's on its way, and Ryan comes to me and says, so Dad, Kendall and I are thinking, her dad's a contractor, we're thinking about moving about 45 minutes away and building a home. Get like 5 acres, you know, Tennesseans land, get 5 acres and build this house, and Cheryl's listening to this as well. And so, getting in behind, he's expressing it as a dream. How often have you been a dream killer to your kids? Okay, if you just got convicted, join the club, number one. And number two, just kind of draw a line in the sand and say, Lord, I repent, not doing that anymore. And step over that line and begin a new day today. Okay? And so Ryan's sharing all this, and I know exactly what's going on in Cheryl's brain. I mean, you're taking my grandbaby 45 minutes away? You mean, and then I'm thinking as a dad, you know, Rye, if you need help from Kendall's family who lives near us as well, or us, that's going to be rough. I'm thinking all this. And I'm thinking also when it comes time to sell that home, you got to have somebody that really wants to be where you want to be. or where you are to buy that, you know, reset all the, so as a dad, but on the outside, we're both just listening. And at the end of that day, I just looked at him and said, Rye, I'm with you. Thanks, Dad. We go home, we pray. And Cheryl, on the car on the way home, honey, don't you know? And she's nailing it, everything, right, exactly right. And I said, I know, but we responded well. And so I said, now let's pray. So we just begin to pray. And so about 3 weeks ago, Ryan and I were just having lunch together. And he said, Dad, with this baby coming now, because they've come to Cheryl and said, because his schedule crosses over, he gets home or has to go around 3:30 to the job he's working at, and Kendall, she works as trauma care at Vanderbilt Hospital, she gets home about 7. There's a couple of days a week where there's going to be about a 3.5-4 hour crossover where they've come to Cheryl and said, would you be willing to pinch hit? So Cheryl's been willing to do that. And so Ryan says, you know, we're kind of realizing if we ask Mom to do that, if we were not living here, she'd have to drive quite a ways. I said, yeah, that's right. And he said, or we would have to run. I said, yeah, exactly. And I'm going, you seeing it? And then he says, but Dad, I don't want to just throw my, you know, he's trying to be wise. I don't want to throw my money away in this ongoing rental. I said, no, I get that. I said, can I throw something at you? Ask for permission. Can I throw something at you? Sure. I said, well, what if you just buy something where you are in this area now? And maybe just 3-4 years, and then see what happens. Oh, I hadn't thought about it like that. Sure enough, last Saturday we're together, and Ryan says to me, hey, Dad, the home we're living in right now, it's like a two-bedroom condo. The guy who owns it said, hey, I want to sell it at the rate I bought it for, because I just need to get out of it. Would you guys like to buy it? I said, well, what do you think? I said, we're going to do it. We didn't say a word. We prayed. We supported his dream. And God shed the light on the other pieces at the right time. Now, is this dream going to go away? Probably not. But we'll just see. It's a win for today. We'll play that game tomorrow. You see what I'm saying? Now let me show you the one piece that's missing. At least from my perspective. I said, Lord, there's obviously a fifth part of the frame. And that is whenever I have advice to freely give it. Where's that one? I'm not seeing how that, like, what is it? I get this part, but does it go out this way and we extend it? Is there a sixth one to make it longer? And I realized, no, that's not there. And so once I got home and I shared this with Cheryl, we covenanted together before the Lord and with each other, this is how we're going to relate to our children. And the only time we give advice is when two things happen. Number one, they ask, which they do, and it's one of the most humbling days of my year when they do. Hey, Dad, what do you think about? And the second one is, if either Cheryl or I feel like the Lord is nudging us to do it and the other one confirms it, which, can I tell you, that's 1 out of 100 times. 99 times, like if Cheryl goes, honey, I think I need to talk to Malia, I go, no, you don't. Or if I say, I got to talk to Rod, Cheryl say, no, I don't think so. And we have agreed that unless we've heard from the Lord together and are in agreement, we don't do it. And that's a killer, because there's times I want to say, you're going off the cliff. Everything in me as a dad wants to. But you know, sometimes Jesus lets them go off the cliff, because then when they come back, they go, I just went off the cliff. And then all I need to say is, yeah, I kind of noticed that. Can I help you? Do you need anything? Instead of, I told you, loser. I just can stand there and say, yeah, how can I help you? Well, I think next time I need to, yeah, that's really good. And hey, and here's a little thing I learned about. Yeah, but see, then they're open to receive. If they don't go off the cliff, they're not open to hear you. I know none of this relates to any of you, but just take good notes. Someday you might need to use it, all right? Are you following me? And see, so when you set things up to be a good relator, even within your own family, so we've got great relationship with our kids. And does it mean we agree with everything, every choice? No, it doesn't. But we can pray. And we can ask God to walk with them and to be with them. And when they go off the cliff, Malia did. In 2011, it was a very heart-painful year for Cheryl and I as we walked Malia through a divorce. Never in a million years would I ever think that was something I was going to experience in my life. But life happened. Kind of ever noticed how that just kind of happens. And we had to walk her through and love her and walk her through and be with her and help her see some of the things that are inside. So now as she's jumped into this other relationship, which is about 3 years later, we're just kind of taking our time with it. She is too. She's learned some things. She saw some things that she contributed because it was an equal opportunity divorce of immaturity is really what it was. And so we've just had to walk with her. She hasn't felt condemned. You know, I remember the day that all the divorce papers came and I looked at her, and Malia's walk with the Lord right now is not where I would like it to be, but she's the first one to bring her lost friends to church. She's got a high mercy gift. And maybe some of your kids are like this, but when someone has a high mercy gift, they're always drawn to the fringes of society. Okay? So I noticed that early on with my daughter, and so I said to her, sweetheart, I want you to know I'm proud of you, that that's a piece of Jesus' heart. They touch people that you would never even get close to. And I said to her, but here's godly wisdom is your best friends need to be people who are healthy so you can bring people into health and not you be sucked into their place. And can I just say with Malia, sometimes it's been a swing and a miss, and she's had to learn that. And so she will be the one that I'm sitting at church on Sunday, and here comes Malia. There's Cheryl and I saying, she said, hey, I'm coming to church bringing us a couple people. Don't really ever know who that's going to be. And she brings in these two people, and it's like, okay, interesting. And we sit down, and she sits down, and she says, Dad, you know, dork, Dad, when we're done, can we all go out to eat lunch so we can talk? And what she's meaning is so you can talk to them. And she said, I'll pay for it. Well, she can't pay for it. And so I said, yeah, honey, and I got it. It's okay. So we go out to lunch. And, you know, just some Mexican restaurant. And Cheryl and I, Malia, and these two friends of hers. And, you know, just eating, visiting. And then we got done with lunch for about an hour. Just sharing Jesus with two people that had no grid. And that's Malia. She is in a place right now where she knows she's, you know, and it's funny to her because for me, because I'll be listening to her on the phone and she's giving counsel in the ways of God. But she's not living it herself in that area. So one day she got off, I said, honey, that was awesome. I'm really proud of you. And then I just said, hey, can I just mention something to you? And she said, sure. And she said, I said, honey, do you know that what you just told that person to do is so wise and so godly? But I said, do you know that you're not doing that? And she said, yeah, Dad, I know. And it wasn't a big heavy. She just said, I know. And she said, Dad, there's just some things I'm trying to work. I said, yeah, and I'm with you. You know, there was no heavy. But because we've had good relationship, we've been able to have talks. So let me tell you this line. To the degree you have relationship, to that same degree, you have authority to speak into somebody's life. To the degree you have relationship with someone, to that same degree you have authority to speak into their life. If you don't have relationship with them, like if you just call them the loser or the, you know, you isolate them or you don't relate to them, how in the world do you expect for them to even hear you? It's like blah, 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 la, 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 they don't hear you. It's like when we used to live in the San Francisco Bay Area, we'd go do outreaches in San Francisco, and one time we were up at the Gay Day Parade, and when you have Christians standing there with signs that say, faggots go to hell, I've never seen one person in that parade see that sign and go, oh, would you tell me more? Never happens. Never happens. If you don't have a relationship, people don't hear you. So one of the reasons we need to be good relators is, number one, because God is a great relator and we need to express Him in the world. Number two, it's because if you don't have relationship, it's a rare opportunity you're going to have to speak into somebody's life. Some of it, if I'm really honest with you, I don't like. I don't like it. I wish I could just tell them what advice I have. Not only because I maybe think I'm smarter, which is probably the problem, but then secondly, because I don't want to see them hurt. or disappointed, you know, whatever the situation is. But that's where there's this little thing that I know none of us here wrestle with, but let's just pretend for people out there, called control. We have to control it. Can I just be bold enough to say this? Manipulation and control have nothing to do with the kingdom of God ever. Ever. That is not how God operates. Do you, and I know this might be out there, but do you know how uncontrolling God is? He's so uncontrolling that he lets people choose to spend an eternity in hell away from him. That's how uncontrolling he is. Is that not remarkable? That is amazing to me. If anybody should say, and he has, but he gives us free will to choose. It's remarkable. So I want to encourage you, don't be a person who walks under manipulation and control. Now, we've got about five, six minutes here, and then we'll take a break. So I want to just talk to you about, since we're talking generationally, just kind of give you a little piece of something here. I was reading not long ago in the New Testament, Luke 17, Acts 13, about David. And it talks about the word there is generation, okay? Well, I think for most of us, when we say generation or generations, we think of like for example, my mom, then there's Cheryl, then there's Malia. That's three generations. Well, that's not wrong thinking at all. But there's another meaning to it I want you to catch. You know, we serve, the Bible calls him the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? You're familiar with that? And you know where that first happened? It was at the burning bush. And God said that, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to Moses. And I don't want you to view that only as a three-generation thing. Abraham, and then there was Isaac, and then there was Jacob. I want you to understand that in the New Testament, there is a word that is used 42 times in the New Testament that when you talk about generation, what it means is a snapshot, thank you, a snapshot of everybody who's on the planet right now. So that right now, we, regardless of an age, our ages are a generation in God's eyes. And a generation is made up of Abraham's, Isaac's, and Jacob's. And God likes it that way. It's not supposed to be this divide. It's supposed to be an interdependence. So let me paint the picture here a little bit. So Abraham's, and I'm sorry I'm using male names, Abraham, anyway, nothing's coming quickly. All right, but say if you're 60 or older, just to give it a feel here, if you're 60 or older, you're an Abraham. And what that means is, you've lived the longest among us, and there's probably the most wisdom in that age group. And do you understand that we often shut people of that age down? And they are carrying some of the wisest counsel you and I could ever imagine. So they bring wisdom to the table. Then you've got the Isaacs, who let's say are in their 40s and 50s. They run with understanding. All right, they understand their gifts and their call, and they run with understanding. They've got the energy to run. They bring understanding to the table. They usually hit their stride somewhere there in their 50s, and they're running with understanding. And then you got the Jacobs that are 20s, 30s, and younger. You know what they bring? They bring fresh perspective and passion. And what we need is all three of those. You need all three. I'll tell you a little more this afternoon about an event I'm hosting in Nashville that you are invited to. And a big part of it is blending Abraham, Isaacs, and Jacobs. I have Jacobs. I was here for the National Prayer Breakfast several years ago, and a pre-meeting that was there, I had Jacobs, these young ladies sitting in front of me, and they all said, they're 20s and 30s, and they said, Dave, we are worn out with people our own age giving us advice. They don't have the experience, but here's what they said. They looked at me total seriously and they said, but everybody we ask that's older than us, like your age, they say, I don't have time for that. Or I'm not called to that. And I about wanted to bawl right there. And I just said, all I can say to you is on behalf of my age group, we are so sorry. Because you're worth investing in. And I have Jacobs that were at this event last year going, you mean that guy over there who's like 60, he's interested in me? Yeah. You mean he would be willing to spend? Yeah. So you have to remember these Jacobs, many of them have come from fatherless and motherless homes. And they're starving for older people to pour into them. I mean, they will buy as much Starbucks as you could possibly suck down if you'd be willing to spend once or twice a month with them. And then I've got the Abrahams going to both ends. I've got the Abrahams looking at me going, you're sure they want me to say something to them? I said, yeah. They want to hear from you. No. Because they've always been told, no, you guys are out of touch. You had your time. It's not ours. That's not how this generation thinks. And so Lonnie, who's a 66-year-old environmental guy, is pouring into a young 20-something up in Pittsburgh. And they've continued over a year now to have a relationship. Probably 40 years between them, 35 years between them age-wise. But Lonnie is totally excited about this guy's passion and perspective on God. And this young man is totally excited about Lonnie pouring in things about agriculture and environment that he needs to know for what he's called to. That's the heart of God. So I don't want you to think of generations only as this separate thing, but I want you to think from God's perspective, it's people that are living on the planet together now, and if you were to stir it into a pot on the stove, we need Abrahams, Isaacs, and Jacobs. Does that make sense? So I want to challenge you in your thinking that way. So let me close by giving you this. How do you relate to Jacobs? Okay? How do you relate to Jacobs? I spend a lot of time with 20 and 30-somethings, and I love them. And let me just get, I'm just going to make this really simple and short. The first thing is, don't be who you're not, be who you are. Don't be who you're not. Be who you are. Because sometimes we think we have to put on something or act a certain way. No. Don't be who you're not, rather, be who you are. Really, really important. Secondly, be willing to give them your life via time. Be willing to give them your life via time. That you give them your time. Okay? That's a really important thing. It's just to give of your time. There was a 20-something last night at Heidi's home that I just felt like I was supposed to sit and give time to. I could have gone to bed, could have slept, could have, but I just felt like I was supposed to give some time to last night. And God did a good thing. But you got to be willing to give your time. A third piece, they actually learn more from your mistakes than your successes. That's really important and freeing for you to know. They actually learn more from your mistakes than your successes. All right? You don't have to say, well, you know, when I started this company, it's like they'll get there. But what they want to know, like when I share, hey, I screwed up here. And so their first question, they're not condemning me. They're just saying, so what did you do? And they want to know because a lot of their world is trying to figure out how do I live life in this planet. So they will often learn more from your failures and your successes. Now, if that doesn't take pressure off, it's not like I'm the perfect mom. That's not what they want. They want to know, like, where do you screw up? It's like, well, that's kind of personal. Yeah, they're going to get personal. That's where humility has to come in. You have to be willing in humility to kind of unzip and be able to share stuff. So when I'm with 20s and 30s in particular, I'll do it fairly freely, but with 20s and 30s, I'll tend to unzip my own heart more and just say, look, here's, like, let me tell you this screw up. And they're just really listening because they want the context. That's why they like the story. And relationally, it connects your heart. But then they want to know, what did you do about it? And so it might be, well, I screwed up again. Well, they want to know that. And they want to know God's ways. Like, how would God have me walk this? A fourth thing, view them through the lens of what great things God can do through them. View them through the lens of what great things God can do through their lives. And help them, because many of them have not had a mom or dad speak over them and say, you're going to be a great man of God. You're going to be a great woman. You're going to do this great. You know, we've been watching a generation being raised where everybody gets a trophy. You know, I feel so bad when you watch the opening stuff of American Idol. I don't know if you've ever watched that. But you got people that should never even have a microphone in their hand singing. And it's because somebody says, you can do whatever you want. Well, yeah, that's true in spirit, of course. But somebody at some point in their life needs to go, you know, if you spent more time doing this instead of singing, you'd be awesome at that area. But we don't. Honey, you can do whatever your dreams are. It's good to have that when a child is little so they know my God is able to do much through me. But then as they begin to get older, you have to come alongside of them and help them see where strong suits are. Don't tell somebody in this room today, if you've never done it, don't go and say, I want to encourage you, you can run the triathlon in Kona. You can do it. 2.5 miles swim in the ocean, then you jump on and just do a little 118-mile bike ride, and then you run a 26.2 marathon. Don't just say, you can do it. Yeah, and die. But when you're talking with Jacobs, look at them through the lenses of what great things God can do. So look for their gifts, look for their strengths, and affirm those things in their lives. And finally, and we'll talk about this after lunch, disciple them around God's character, ways, and mission. Show them the character of God through your life and in the Scripture. Teach them God's ways. Model it for them. Get them on mission with God. And pour in the things of God into them. I love working with that age group. I love how honest they are. I tell them sometimes, you know, sometimes that really isn't a good idea to put that up on Facebook. That would have been better to talk privately. But because nobody's ever told them, they don't know. They don't know. And their peers are doing it, so they think, and it's like, you know, so once you go, you know, did you know that could actually get you fired because your boss, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Okay, well now they're thinking about it, now they don't. But if nobody comes alongside of them who's for them, once the young Jacob knows you're for them, you got a new best friend. See? So, Jesus, we thank you for the incredible relator that you are. And Lord, you know we all kind of feel like kindergartners here today in this area. We all have room to grow. We all have muscles that can be flexed. And there's maybe some points today that we need to say, Jesus, forgive me. And I just want to encourage you. You may not have a moment now to do it, but even if it's in your car on your way home, repentance means, God, I own that area I just did. And I ask you to forgive me. God cleanses us, it says in 1 John 1:9, of all sin when we confess it. And you don't need to go home with this being carried on your head. Deal with it before you get home and say, Jesus, I repent for the negative things, for not being there, for, you know, in whatever it is. And ask the Lord to forgive you. And then begin to say, God, teach me your ways. Teach me your ways. And I'll tell you, you might shock your kids. You might shock others around you because now you're seeing a different light. But Lord, I pray that you'd empower these precious ladies to be able to bring Jesus into the places and relationships and people in their lives, wherever they go. In Jesus' name, amen.